Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello. For thousands of years, people have trusted the plants growing in nearby hedges, woods, forests, and jungles to relieve their aches, pains, and ailments. Without the wise women, hedge witches, herbalists, and physicians who recorded their practices, modern medicine and the pharmaceutical industry would not exist today. But with so many negative side effects emerging from many synthetic drugs, a huge shift is taking place, with more and more people turning back to natural organic substances, plants, herbs, and fungi to alleviate their ailments and support their health and well-being. David Farrell is a trained plant spirit healer, geomancer, crystal healer, new mysteries initiate, and also he's the co-founder of the groundbreaking events Gateways of the Mind, Plant Consciousness, and the Shamanic Lands, as well as the popular online TV platform wisdomhub.tv. David Farrell joins me now to share some of his prodigious knowledge of quantum healing, earth energies, dowsing, magic, and sacred plants, and tell us about some specific plants that can be especially useful to us right now. David Farrell, welcome.
Hi, Sandy. It's great to be back having a chat with you again after our recent
show. You too. Can't get enough. I want to pick your brains.
Welcome.
So, tell us a little bit about, you know, I know that you come from a Celtic background, your ancestry is from Cornwall and Ireland, and your Celtic roots do form a very strong part of your healing and shamanic practices. But you're the son of an archaeologist, and you spent many hours exploring ancient settlements and stone circles on the moors, but you weren't particularly interested in plants, certainly not the magical healing side of plants, until much more recently. So tell us how that all came about for you.
Yeah, thank you for that introduction, Sandy. So there's a couple of threads there which you've kind of brought in quite early. So one is my fascination with history and being out on the land and being brought up in a family that was of Cornish and Irish origins, and so particularly my dad's side of the family are actually Irish immigrants to Cornwall several hundred years ago, settling down in West Cornwall, an area called Penwith that really stretches from sort of St Ives, Penzance to Land's End. And down there are a lot of stone circles and burial tombs and all kinds of stuff. It's a really magical place. And because of the very liminal nature of Cornwall, because it's a peninsula, surrounded by so much water, it's a land that's imbued with myths and tales of mermaids and giants and all kinds of wild and wicked spirits in some cases. But Penwith Moor is a really quite a magical place. And I moved to Cornwall as a teenager and spent a lot of time riding my bike out on the moors and visiting these wild, windswept, often very damp places. And as you said, my dad was an archaeologist. He was a marine archaeologist, actually, early in his life, and was very interested in the Norse traditions and Vikings and all those kinds of things too. But as a child, we spent a lot of time out on these wet and wild moors looking at stone circles and wondering what it was all about. So that was always something that I grew up with in a household that had a very strong sense of its own Celtic identity, being very Cornish on my dad's side too. And my granddad was a patron of his hometown, really, of St Ives, which is where my dad's family had been for a long time. So that was on the one side. As it turns out, my mother actually is also a great gardener. And I did spend a fair amount of time in the garden as a child, mostly kicking football up against the blackberry bushes and mostly annoying my parents. But I always loved being outside as a kid. I spent a lot of time, particularly when my brothers and sisters came along. And so there was a lot for my mum to deal with. I'd often take myself off as a child into the countryside, particularly in Devon where I lived as a smaller child. And I just used to explore and find places that appealed to me energetically. And at the time, I didn't really understand why, but I look back now at some of the places that I went out and I realised that they were often quite magical places. And as an empathic boy, I, you know, I didn't really understand all of that. But now I look back and I'm just like, yeah, you know, I always had this joy to find places in nature. And that sort of later evolved in my sort of 30s after meeting the very powerful plant ayahuasca and having this conversation about talking to plants. I suddenly remembered how much I love nature and how much I love being outside. And that's been the journey for the last decade, really, is going back into nature and remembering how much we are all a part of nature and how by working with plant medicines, we can really start to remember that about ourselves. And what I love about working with nature is something that a lot of indigenous, particularly North American indigenous people work with, which is the medicine wheel, which is really understanding the sort of the seasonal cyclical process that goes on of death and rebirth through the seasons. And, you know, that's a beautiful modality to work with because you can use it for anything. You know, you can use it for creating projects, or you can work with the natural cycle to get the best out of your garden, to, you know, meet the medicine plants. And but it also teaches us about these cycles of the different elements of air to fire to water to earth and then back to air, and how that relates to the different directions and the different seasons. And I've been working with that now for quite a long time, and I found that it's given me a real grounding and rooting here on the planet and a way to navigate particularly all of the crazy energies that are going on right now, and how to stay centered in what is real. And for me, the one thing that is always real is always Mother Earth and nature. You know, I can go outside and I think that the tree is there and that I'm touching it, at least I hope so, but what's going on so that's so illusory in our world, I think it's really good to bring things back to ourselves and to remember where our feet are on the ground and to root ourselves and ground ourselves and center ourselves. And I like to use the example of the Ents in the second Lord of the Rings movie, where they kind of brace themselves and they bring the dam down and the water flows and all of the horrible orcs and goblins get washed away, but the trees are standing strong because they're rooted. I think that that's a very good image to have right now, a way to deal with
it. So you were a politics graduate, and you say that it was your first encounter with ayahuasca that kind of changed things. What drew you to ayahuasca? Was it, you know, just, oh, I'm going to go and see what this is like? I mean, was it such a mind-blowing experience for you that it changed everything?
That's a good question. Yes and no, actually. I mean, the plant had been calling me for several years beforehand. It was in my awareness, even when I lived in Dubai before I returned to Britain. So that was at the Buddhist Institute in Italy, studying there at the time. I was often kind of confused as to why Buddhism, or to that particular branch of Tibetan Buddhism, really kind of negated aspects of shamanism and plant work. And they were really quite down, actually, on even the idea of Mother Earth having her own consciousness. So that was something that wasn't really accepted. And that was actually where I started to separate a little bit from my Buddhist studies, because I just fundamentally found that difficult to get on board with. That then led to, yes, an experience with Mother Ayahuasca. And it wasn't that it was so full on and so wild compared to some of my later journeys with ayahuasca, but it was kind of, I guess in many ways, it was similar to a lot of my journeys with plants, in that it was quite direct, quite succinct, and not that spectacular, actually. Just a very simple kind of transmission about, first of all, organizing the plant consciousness event. That's where that idea came from. But also just this idea of plant communication, and, you know, what better way to kind of catch somebody's attention than communicating with them whilst they're on a plant medicine. And so that's what ayahuasca did. She was just like, you know, there are other plants that you can speak to, not just me. But yeah, that kind of really, I guess, quite quickly reignited a love of nature, and just suddenly opened a doorway for me into something that seemed really quite magical, but also very important, which is how to communicate with the conscious intelligence of plants. And sure, you know, it's a bit easier, I guess, or a bit more visceral to do that with plants like ayahuasca or psilocybin mushrooms or peyote or iboga or any of these kinds of so-called stronger teacher plants. But it's, in my experience since then, some of the strongest plants I've met are the ones that grow right outside of your door. It's just in a very, very different way. You know, I think what I would say about working with the so-called entheogens is that particularly ayahuasca, but also the mushroom, they're quite close in their nature to human consciousness, and they're quite malleable. And so they can be, they can we sometimes, particularly ayahuasca, can be a little bit subject to intentions being set, or what we would call spelling, because they're of a sort of a fluid frequency. Whereas when you deal with mugwort, there is a frequency that is mugwort, there is a frequency which is nettle, and within that is contained the information of that being. It's one way I could describe it. So how within that kind of spectrum, there is always more to learn and there is more to co-create. And this for me has been the big part of the journey, is co-creation, plants, and working out new ways to work with them in the quantum space. So yes, on the one hand, not so mind-blowing, but on the other hand, completely life-changing. I guess, yeah, it was mind-blowing. Absolutely. Really,
I mean, you're incredibly well-trained. You've, you know, devoted so many years to training in different modalities with different experts. I have a question for you. After our last conversation a few weeks ago, when you were my guest on the No BS Spiritual Book Club, I was talking to somebody about you and the conversation. And this is somebody who works with energy. And many, many people are very familiar now with things like energy medicine, you know, different Reiki, bark flower remedies, tinctures, etc. But they couldn't go as far as accepting that you can talk to a plant. So say a few words about that, because I mean, I can see that, but you know, that somebody could be so steeped in energy, but that little bit there is a barrier for them. I find very strange.
Yeah, thank you, Sandy. It's a good question. And I think there may be different ways of approaching the answer to that. I mean, I think in the line of spiritual work, when I encompass all of these different things, you know, the different types of energy work, Reiki and working with magnets and crystals and stones. I mean, there's, you know, we've really been gifted on this planet with so many different ways to heal ourselves, you know. And I think that what I like about that is that it kind of tailors or gives the opportunity to the individual to find what works for them. And what maybe works for one person is a little bit more challenging, or, you know, doesn't work for somebody else. And certainly over my years of being on the inner path, I've definitely come across modalities of different types of healing, or even tradition or ideas that really resonated with me straight off the bat, and I sort of didn't resonate at all. And that can often be life experiences and what we bring through into this life. So I mean, I've done a lot of work with different plants on my soul's journey, on past lives, and so I have quite a detailed, you could say, map or account of my soul's journey, particularly over the last 2,000 years, and it's littered almost on every single occasion with magic and plants and medicine work. And so I guess really for me, a lot of this last 10 years has been more of a remembering rather than perhaps a learning. And I've definitely learned a lot, but I would definitely say that a large part of it has been remembering who I am and what I do and why I'm here right now. And I think that that really is what I would suggest that the plants can really help us with. But in terms of talking to plants, I mean, it's kind of, how to say, they talk a different language, and you know, I would never want anyone to think that it's like I'm having a half an hour chat on the telephone or something, you know, and it's kind of a back and forth. It's not quite like that. I often find that a lot of the communication comes in synchronicities, or very, very, very sort of brief, instant sort of like, oh, like downloads or realizations or just an intuition to do something. But because I've worked with so many plants for so long, I know, how to say, the energetic blueprint or frequency or template of so many plants, that I can feel my energy field shift slightly when those plants want to communicate with me. And that's really because of a process that I've done with a lot of plants, which is what we call dieting, or setting aside a certain amount of time to really be with a plant. In my case, I would often grow the plant, spend a full seasonal cycle with that, watching it grow in the garden, looking after it. Then I would spend the second year making medicines from the plant, making a flower essence, all with permission and co-creation. And then probably by the third year of being with a plant, then I'll do a dieta using the medicines and the essences that I've made in the previous seasons, and really kind of enter into a space, a sacred space with a plant. Could be for, it's normally for 3 weeks. Sometimes it's longer. I've done several that are 2 months. And they're different in nature, but they're based on the South American principle of dieting with plants, where, you know, an apprentice will spend time with his maestro. He'll probably open a plant diet with a ceremony, maybe probably with ayahuasca, to really open up this sort of 4D face, so that we're much more able to receive the communications of the plants, who really are quantum. We're talking about quantum intelligence here. So a lot of it is about retuning our own radio dial so that we can start to dial into the frequencies of these plants. And that's what the diet process will do, is over whatever has been set. In the jungle, the person will be left alone, probably periods of time at a hut in the jungle, and they'll be bought another medicine. Could be bobinsana. There's so many plants, right? And so using the combination of the sort of more hallucinogenic ayahuasca and opening up the consciousness space into the other realms, then it gives the opportunity by drinking the other medicine plant to allow that medicine to come through and for the conscious intelligence of the plant to make contact with you. And so by being in that very dedicated, simple space, often a very simple food, the body starts to fast, starts to, what then happens is the body becomes filled, or the energy field becomes filled with the frequency of the plant that you're dieting. And once you get a little feel for this work, it's kind of, you could say it's almost a little bit addictive, because you realize that there's suddenly a whole world out there of beings that want to make friends with you. And, you know, I often say that I think that particularly the medicine plants, the strong medicine plants, they're like bodhisattvas. They're ascended, realized beings who've come back to share their gifts of medicine and healing with us, and without even asking anything in return. Although it's always nice to give a gift when they're making medicines. So, yeah, this is, and by doing that, once we start to have our energy field filled with the frequency of another plant, we can start to really feel the differences between our own energy, and then maybe when we have dandelion in our field, how does dandelion feel? And there is a lot more, you know, to do with this. We do a lot of felt sensation work when we take students through this process, just to sit with the plant, feel yourself out, feel the energy, what's going on. And, you know, this is where being in the moment, which is a real dandelion experience, but being in the present moment allows a sort of a gestalt to form in our end, and then we just kind of sink into a no mind space, and then what starts to arise is often messages, visions, pictures. And this is where we can start to learn about our own inner lexicon. You know, everybody has an inner, how to say, alphabet or vocabulary, and what's really amazing with plants is how they're able to adapt to every single one of us uniquely and individually. And they can work with our higher selves, and our higher selves, of course, are a part of us. And so then through that kind of combination, the language, personal communication with a plant can start to take place. And but that's also something that we can all do, is work in groups. There is often a lot of commonalities, and that's why doing group plant diets can often be so powerful, particularly when we do the sharing with people's experiences. Often we go, oh my God, I had the same experience as you over there. And someone's like, oh, so did I. And so then it kind of adds energy to the experience, and then it becomes something that, you know, becomes much more fixed in the individual's energy field. So it's a process. But what I love about it is that working with nature brings us into the present moment.
It's interesting, because I mean, all those hedge witches and shamans and the people who've been using plants for millennia must have had some kind of intuitive hit that particular plant was going to work for a particular ailment, and that's a conversation.
Right. Yeah. In fact, that's often, there's lots of great stories that come out of the Amazon around how did they find ayahuasca, or the one that it's not a plant per se, but the cambo medicine, that a shaman from a tribe in the Amazon's tribe were dying, and he didn't know what to do. None of his medicines were working ayahuasca, and the medicine told him to go to a particular tree and find a particular frog and do a whole series of things, and this would help his tribe. And so he did exactly that, went to the tree, found the frog, did the things, and his tribe got healed. So you know, this is the work of the medicine man in this way, is to be able to be in a clear enough space to listen uncontaminated, unpolluted to the voices or intelligences that are communicating. So yeah, it's, you know, I guess there's a bit of a chicken and egg situation, right? You know, how many plants did somebody have to consume before they got the right one? I kind of think that it's a little bit more intuitive than that, and that maybe our ancestors who learned from these things. Perhaps had a clearer connection to their higher self, you know, so
I have heard, and I'm not sure where I heard this, that when you move into a new house, you should not do anything with the land, the garden, the property for at least 6 months, because the plants, which we might call weeds, that start to grow there will be the ones that are growing there for you that match your energy. Is that true?
I would say so, yes. There's, you know, quite some interesting things to say there. So moving into any new house, of course, also talking from the point of view of geomancy, it's good to do a cleansing on the house, remove any energies or imprints from the previous tenants. It's also good to form a communication with the Devic spirit of the property. One of the things that often happen, particularly when people convert buildings from one usage to another, is that the Devic spirit of the building isn't informed. And so you can have a Devic spirit of a barn, let's say of a cow barn, and then it's converted into a house. And so the spirit and all of the energy around it is still working on the premise that it's a barn. And so it tailors its energy like that. So when humans move in, it kind of sets things off slightly. And so this is just something to be, you know, to also factor in. But yeah, there's a lot around this idea. Whatever is growing naturally in our garden is communicating with the microbiology in our gut. And, you know, there's a kind of an unspoken quantum relationship that is going on, particularly if you bring more conscious awareness into it. But whatever is growing in your garden is somewhat attenuated already to what your body needs. You know, and there's also another idea as well, that if you get seeds and then you put some of your saliva on them and then you grow those, that plant will be absolutely tuned to your frequency. You know, the plant, Sandy, I think is something that's going to be a big part of the new earth future. I've talked a lot about this before, and I've talked to the Ascended Master Zachariah about this, and he completely concurred. He said, yes, the future of healthcare is quantum plant intelligence being administered by the individual to themselves with the assistance of the plant. And I really think that we're on the edge of something hugely exciting. I think that it's clear to see now that a lot of the chemical-driven pharmaceuticals in our world are not really healing anybody, but actually making people quite sick. Yeah. And it's time to take back the responsibility to ourselves and say, I no longer give you the responsibility for my health because you've done a pretty god-awful job of it. And maybe I want to take it back to myself and start working with the natural energies, which is what, of course, our ancestors did. And I think with the shifting of the ages that we're going through, moving back now energetically into, or starting to open out, maybe saying it, into a new type of lighter energy that enables us to be more able to communicate with plants, to fish, but also to be in that higher quantum fire where we can have these beautiful communications with other plants. But I'm really excited about the future, to be honest. There's potential.
Well, it's interesting to see how many things like bark flower remedies, homeopathy, Hahnemann with his tissue salts, etc. All of these things have emerged over the last, 100 years, 150 years. And now there are so many different kinds of flower remedies that people are creating. And it's as if there's this complete, you know, opening up of information and knowledge that's available to us that we weren't listening to before.
I agree. You know, and it's so easy to make these medicines ourselves. And, you know, I mean, many great hedge witches and teachers and so on. But in the end, I think to make a tincture is very easy, to make a flower essence is very easy. And really what it just requires you to be is present and to be in a place of love and respect and reciprocity with the plants. And so, you know, sure, you know, making flower, and if I think back to some of the herbs that I made, they weren't the best, you know, because I would often test them. I would do a mushroom ceremony and test the energy of the plants. This is one of the ways that I learned to communicate actually with plants, was by holding sacred fungi ceremonies, opening up very similarly in the way that they use ayahuasca in South America. But I wanted to work with the native sacred medicines of our lands, in this case when I was still living in Britain, and particularly in Cymru in Wales, where a lot of this medicine grows, if you know where to look. And so opening up those kind of spaces and then doing a ceremony that's dedicated to the plant that I've just made an essence with. So that would be a really interesting way. And this is how I first met mugwort soap, basically. It really was my first strong plant ally, was by doing this process of a fungi ceremony, then the essence that had been made, and then calling in the spirit of mugwort in this case, and then seeing what happens. And it was quite surprising what happened. Really, I mean, mugwort is a very, very powerful plant. And we used to run a lot of retreats with mugwort. And I think anyone who's ever attended any of those mugwort retreats, they'll stick in the memory, because she's very, very visceral. And she's one of the easier plants to have an experience with. And it's amazing how many people often say that they get stopped in their tracks by mugwort, and suddenly it's like, oh, like, what's this plant? And that's how she is. She's right up in your face. She's quite a strong, pushy plant, mugwort, and I like that about her. But she always needs to be center stage. She's a witch queen. She's a queen of the herbs, and so she demands that kind of space and that respect. But another reason why she's so good at this is because she's very good at pushing chi energy. She's used in moxibustion, and so moving energy around and being up in people's faces, that's kind of part of the Artemisia clan's imprint anyway. I'll probably talk about Wormwood a little bit too. She's another very, very in your face kind of plant. But plants that get your attention, and they want to get your attention for a reason, has your attention, she's not really going to let go of it. And I've been nearly a decade, and she's a massive part of my healing processes, my own personal processes, but also how I work with my clients. And so yeah, this is a good time to get out and start looking for mugwort, actually.
Well, what would I experience? What might I experience if I was to engage with mugwort?
Well, I wouldn't want to presage anything, but, mugwort is very much about realignment, bringing your energies into a place of alignment, which again speaks to me of the energies of how moxa works, For those of your viewers who don't know what moxibustion is, it's a traditional Chinese medicine practice that involves using acupuncture on the meridian points, and then moxa, the plant mugwort, is made into little kind of cones using the leaves, and then the cones are burnt over the acupuncture points, and so then it goes through the needle and spreads through the meridian line, so it pushes the qi energy around the body. So it's really good at moving heat. When you burn mugwort, and this is one of the qualities, she burns at a temperature that is the closest to human natural body temperature, so it's easy for her to be moved around the body and to get into the what the Chinese would call the cold places in the body and put the heat there so that the energy can start to move. So she's very, very good at moving stagnant energies. If you were to drink mugwort tea or take mugwort essence before bed, there's a good chance you're going to have some very, very strong dreams. For those people who already dream very well, there's a possibility to have lucid dreams. And for those people who haven't dreamt at all or don't remember their dreams for a while, then a cup of tea, and you might be quite surprised at how much you suddenly remember of your dreams. So, I mean, mugwort's a plant, Sandy, that's been with humans for well over 1,000 years. And so we have a lot of information from our ancestors about how to work with these plants. There's lots of tomes from the witches, the grimoires about working on what she is. The Artemisias are a witch clan. They are all witches, but what that means to me is that they're very non-dual, everything from a non-dual perspective. So I often think the Artemisias are a bit like a Raffle Dakini or something. You don't want to get on the wrong side of mugwort. You really don't. She's also like Elder, who's another very strong witchy plant, very, very powerful as well. But these plants are, also very good for dealing with the dark arts and helping to remove bad energies. She has a strong, even she's a witch herself, so she's used to dealing with the dark arts. So mugwort is, I really, if you want to get into some wiki woo magical stuff with plants, then mugwort's your lady. She okay. Is the queen of the herbs.
Okay, well, we're going to take a short break now, and you can tell us about some more plants that you've picked out as being especially useful to us right now. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and today I'm unraveling the healing mysteries of plants, quantum healing, earth energies, and plant medicine with plant shaman, geomancer, crystal healer, you mysteries initiate, and co-founder of the popular wisdomhub.tv online platform, David Farrell. We'll be back after the break with more on the plants that can help you. Stay tuned.
Om Times TV. Imagine becoming a super influencer. Reinvent yourself, invest in your brand, and then manifest your success with a robust, spheric approach. Om Times Media and Broadcasting offers a unique and multifaceted way to become the spiritual and conscious influencer you deserve to be by putting your message across our powerful platform with its proven record of integrity and excellence. Through our produced shows, Om Times offers the opportunity to become a social media TV personality, a radio show host, an Om Times magazine columnist, and a syndicated podcaster, all in one shot. By live streaming your show on Om Times TV and broadcasting it across the extensive Om Times radio and TV networks, you become more than a host. You become an ambassador and a force for positive change. Om Times. Open yourself to the possibilities.
If I could be you, and you could be me for just 1 hour. If we could find a way to get inside each other's minds.
Walk a mile in my shoes. Walk a mile in my shoes. Well, before you abuse, criticize, and accuse, walk a mile in my shoes.
Welcome back. David Farrell, we were talking earlier about the timeliness, you know, how everything seems to be moving us in a direction of expanding consciousness, including the plant kingdom. What do you think about a lot of people who are into crystals have noticed that there are many new crystals showing up that we hadn't had before? And the same thing seems to be happening in the fungi kingdom, where there have been two new species that I've heard about in the last few weeks, one in Madeira and one in Australia. Do you think that these things kind of come to us, reveal themselves when the timing is right?
I do, absolutely, yes. And my main plant spirit teacher, Pam Montgomery, talked about this some years ago, and she also talked about the plants that would be stepping up at this time that had already communicated with her about their role in the future. And also she had students at that time who were communicating with plant spirits that hadn't even manifested yet into actual plants. So, you know, again, this for me comes back to this idea of what are the plants, you know, are they bodhisattvas who are manifesting on the planet, you know, gift of being able to bilocate, you know, and be everywhere at once. I mean, dandelion is probably covering the planet, right? So, you know, what kind of being is able to manifest himself into 100 million forms all over the planet? So I think that we're going to discover maybe new plants and new fungi, new crystals, but I also think that we're probably going to expand on our understanding of herbalism from a three-dimensional perspective and how it can work in the body. But also by working much more strongly now with the conscious intelligence of plants, I think we're going to see a rapid expansion in our understanding of who or what we're actually communicating with. You know, rather than just seeing them as these plants that grow outside of our door, actually start to see them as the manifestation of much more realized, higher dimensional beings that we can communicate with. So I absolutely agree with that, Sandy, yes. And that's partly why I'm so excited, you know. And heck, you know, I don't know how many different types of plants and mushrooms there are in the world, but there must be a lot. So there's no chance of ever getting bored in this work. There's always more friends that you can make and more plants that you can diet with. And what I love about this work too is that it gives so much scope for individuals such as myself or my students or other people into this work to find the plants that resonate with them. And that for me is often one of the most exciting and interesting aspects of this, of seeing which plants reach out to certain people and communicate with them. I've had people come and talk to me about pineapple weed, reaching out to them. A young guy once at a talk at a festival came up and asked me whether that was a real thing and was he going mad. And I was like, no, that's really interesting, pineapple weed. It's not one that I know, but it's part of the chamomile family. One of my students I often talk about had a very powerful connection with fleabane, shortly after doing some of our work. And so, you know, I think that's so exciting. You know, there's so many different plants, you know, to have a fleabane shaman, a pineapple weed shaman, a mugwort shaman, or whatever. You know, it just speaks to me of how profoundly deep and broad the natural world actually is. And, you know, of course, that's not even going into animal communication. A lot of indigenous tribes work with animal spirits, you know, so there's so many different ways to make your inner journey colorful and think the tableau on which you want to take your soul on. And I think that at this time we're being offered this incredible opportunity to go inwards. You know, a lot of the astrology that's going on at the moment is forcing us to go inwards, to disconnect from the things that are not serving us, and to start realizing that we are sovereign beings, and how we approach the world is on our terms, not on terms that are given to us. And I think that, you know, plants like nettle, for example, nettle is a great boundary plant. You know, if you look at nettle out in the wild, particularly in Wales where we have a lot of hawthorn trees, you'll often see nettle growing in these kind of, I almost think they look like Roman legionary soldiers in rows, sort of almost like phalanxes surrounding, in this case, you know, the fairy queen, the May Queen, which is a beautiful hawthorn tree. And, you know, also nettle is a great plant for meditation. It brings you into a place of stillness, as the great ascended master in Tibet and Buddhist Milarepa. He spent 20 years in the cave drinking only nettle tea and had many profound experiences. And I used to meditate a lot with it, actually, in Italy when I was at the center, and found it to be a very calming plant, but also one that's very good at creating space for ourselves and creating strength on our boundaries, which I think is really important right now, you know, so that we are in a place of listening to our own inner truth, our own inner narrative, and not accepting other people's, wherever they're coming from, you know. So this is a great plant for these times. And oak, you know, oak is, we have a tradition in Britain about the two kings, the oak, the king of summer, and holly, the king of winter. And they really are, when you meet the spirits of these trees, I mean, oak, I particularly know, holly also know a bit too, but oak, I've worked with a lot. And when you meet that spirit, particularly on a medicine journey like ayahuasca oak, you realize that you are dealing with an incredibly powerful being who is a king, and he exhibits the qualities of a king. Not only does he hold his space so beautifully with his branches reaching up to the high heavens and his root into the earth and his trunk solidly in this, what we call the middle world, the world of humans and animals, and but he holds that space so beautifully that he can also encompass many other beings in his space too. He doesn't ask anything, but sometimes you see trees growing, other trees growing out of oak trees, and you see so many animals and insects. Then you realize that within the boundaries of an oak is a perfect kingdom of beings all living happy, well, probably happily and harmoniously together. But they've, you know, they've got the oak tree as their central kind of home, I guess. And I think that that's really beautiful. And that, to me, a quality that our ancestors and the old king list would talk about, which is true king doesn't take, but he takes it because of what he can hold, and he doesn't ask of anything, he just holds himself and gives. And I think that that's a really beautiful part of the oak tree too. So these are two trees, or sorry, you know, trees and plants to work with right now. So this is how plants can really help us navigate some of these more choppy energy, Sandy.
Yeah, I've worked with bark flower remedies for about 30 years, and I always like to test things. I use them on my dog because everybody said, oh, it's mind over matter. Obvious thing to say. But if they work on a dog and they work, then it's not mind over matter. And my dog's behavior changed amazingly after I started giving him flower remedies in his water. So I know the value of this. Tell me about some of the other plants that are especially beneficial to us right now.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting what you just said there about animals too, is that this, because animals don't have the same sort of mental gymnastics going on that maybe humans do. You know, a dog is a dog, and a horse is a horse, and they're pretty sure they're a horse, and they're pretty sure they're a dog, and they operate like that. And humans, we're not sure what we are, I think, half the time, so we're a bit confused. But when we use essences on animals, we can see horses are a great animal to work on with essences, yeah. Actually. They really show very rapid responses because they're just receiving, I guess you can say, the information or the frequency of the essence, and the plant is able to go to work in the field then of the animal. So, yeah, this is a really excellent way of understanding how what some people might consider woo-woo medicine actually really does have a powerful effect if we get our minds out of the way. So Yeah, there are a lot of plants I work with right now. I just already alluded to a couple. Another one that you will hear me talking about a fair amount is wormwood, Artemisia absinthium. Very kind of cosmic cousin, I would guess, of mugwort. Mugwort is very grounded and rooted in this realm. Wormwood, on the other hand, is actually quite off-planet. You know, what I think is fascinating right now is that wormwood is actually mentioned in the Book of Revelations. When the third angel blows their trumpet, a star appears in the sky, and the star's name is Wormwood. And wormwood makes the water turn bitter. You know, so it's interesting if you're into, let's just say, the more prophetic end of what is happening in these ages, then it's interesting to understand. And the plant is actually named in the Bible, so I find that fascinating. But knowing what I know about wormwood and her anti-parasitical qualities, I think that there's something very profound in that that is certainly, I think, going to expand over the coming weeks and months. You know, I've not actually verified this myself, but I have heard from a number of people that medicine ivermectin is actually based in its origin on wormwood, because it's the most anti-parasitical plant. Another member of that family is Artemisia annua, which is sweet wormwood, which has just recently been in the news because of a certain global entrepreneur who likes to grow medicines and then take them into laboratory and synthesize them and make products out of them, has realized that Artemisia annua has the highest anti-malaria properties. I actually dieted before I went to Ecuador, did a 3-week parasite cleanse, and as a consequence didn't get any parasites, didn't have to have a malarial jab, and came back from the Amazon probably one of the first ever white people to do so, I guess, without any parasites. A friend of ours went to Africa to do her Bwiti initiation and took the same medicine. All of her crew that she was with all got hospitalized. She was the only one that didn't, and she didn't take any tablets either. So this is, you know, these are strong plants, but they're very, very highly parasitic. And right now in our world, we have a lot of very deep energies that are doing us any good. They're making us sick. They're feeding on our energies. And, you know, wormwood is really a star being, I think. But what she really does well, and this is how I work with wormwood a lot, is to open the third eye so that we can really start to see the veil of the illusion. Now, working with wormwood is, I mean, you know, absinthe, for anyone who's ever drunk, it can be a little trippy. Wormwood is right on the border of being a psychedelic. For the super sensitive people, she, you know, she's probably going to open up your third eye quite quickly. And that sounds great. People are like, oh, you know, I want to know what is the truth and to see the truth. And wormwood's like, are you sure? Are you sure you really want to see the truth? It's not quite what you think it's going to be. And that's wormwood's whole persona. It's like, well, you asked, you wanted to see. I'm sorry, it's not more pleasant, or it's not quite what you hoped it was going to be. But, you know, if you are an individual who wants to see what is really going on in our world right now, wormwood is the truth seeker. She is the plant that just opens the veil and allows you to see the truth. And once you know the truth, your life is never the same again. And, you know, for everybody that could be different, but there is an individual truth, I think, within a collective truth. And so wormwood has these two great qualities of being a very anti-parasitic. And when you do a parasite with wormwood, I particularly recommend Dr. Hilda Clark protocol. But also what it does is it fills your field with this kind of this anti-parasitic energy. It's a bit like being fumigated. I once did a mushroom ceremony whilst I was doing parasite cleanse, and it was an interesting experience. It's not one that I would repeat, but I definitely got to see what it's like to be fumigated. And I was like, what on earth's going on here? And she's like, you wanted to do the parasite cleanse, you wanted to do the ceremony, now you know. It's like, okay, fair enough. But what I also learned was that kind of post-cleanse, our field is kind of filled with energy for about 4 to 6 months. And that actually prevents a lot of unhelpful energies or parasitic beings from coming into our field, because they'll die. You know, wormwood is actually a killer, much as I love her and she's one of my favorite plant allies. She kills things, she kills parasites, you know. So that's a good thing. Yeah. Sometimes we need to release these energies out. So,
yeah. St. John's wort is something that helps people with anxiety and depression, isn't it?
It is. I mean, it's also had a bit of a hatchet job on it from the pharmaceutical industry. So I would very if anyone out there is reading that online, I would not pay too much attention to that. However, you know, there are some supposed side effects with St. John's wort, but St. John's wort is very much about the crown chakra. However you're feeling on any given day, you take St. John's wort and you're always going to feel better. St. John's wort is nature's anti-depression plant, really and truly. I'm a big fan of St. John's wort, and working with St. John's wort will always bring more light into your field, but particularly at the crown chakra, which is really where I like to work with him. But as a being, you know, St. John's wort also has the energy of St. John the Baptist, who of course was a somewhat of a mentor, I think, for Jesus, and was a shaman. He did 40-day wilderness quest, you know, when St. John went into the desert, he had a garland of mugwort tied around his waist. I think that's super interesting because mugworts, she's also visionary to some extent, like Wormwood, maybe not quite as strongly, but she can also help open the third eye, super protective. So I find it very interesting that this is also this great balance between St. John's wort and mugwort. Actually, St. John's wort is very solar, very yang. Mugwort is much more lunar, much more feminine, much more yin. And so they're two really beautiful plants to work in tandem with, actually. And for anyone out there who's wanting to work a bit more with the magical end of the plants.
It's interesting that you said St. John's wort is more solar, because one of the warnings about St. John's wort is it can cause photosensitivity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's called Hypericum perforatum because of the kind of fine, almost filter-like quality to its leaves. And I personally am still not sure. This is, I think, perhaps one of the myths out there. And there are lots about certain plants that have been kind of embedded into our culture. The nightshades are another one that we've been told that actually make your joints swell up. And in fact, I'm going to be doing another interview with a friend of mine very soon about the nature of nightshades and how this is a complete myth. Actually, what happens is when we take nightshade plants and they make our joints show in this where there's already blockages in our body, and this is something that plants do a lot of. And often when people start taking plant medicine, it seems to them that it's making the situation worse. What I have found and realized is the plants are actually bringing us into a place of illumination and realizing the underlying problem they're trying to bring our attention to. And this has been my experience almost unanimously with all plants, is that they're like, hey, look, see, you've got an issue down in your joint. And so it's not that the tater I kind of got it in for you and there's a blockage here that we want to help you with. And I think that one of the biggest kind of difficulties that herbal medicine has had in recent years is sort of the instant effect that Western medicine can have, which is you get given some painkillers or something, and suddenly some medication 2 days later and your problem seemingly is gone. Unfortunately, plaster has been put over. But, you know, plants is they work on the mind, body, and spirit. They're holistic. And I think that that's why working with plants is so much more rewarding, because they take us to a place of the origin of whatever the trauma is. And the body is really, you know, when we've got these aches and pains, it's manifesting the trauma that is going on somewhere in our emotional body. There is nothing in my experience, Andy, that appears in the physical body that doesn't have an emotional trauma. And sometimes it's a little bit convoluted to find that, or it's a little bit difficult to see. But this has been my experience after working with hundreds and hundreds of clients in the energy fields and seeing how things manifest in the body. You know, in the Western medicine, we tend to approach from this end, bother working backwards into the emotional realms. We just try to fix everything here. Whereas I really think that indigenous groups and our ancestors had the understanding that this physical suit is the end of the train line, so to speak. And once something's in the body, it's because it's been hanging around for quite a long time, unrecognized, I guess, in the emotional realms.
We have to talk about, obviously, dangers of people just going out and picking plants and trying to make teas with them. What is the best way, what would you recommend if someone wants to start experiencing some of these? I mean, should they go straight to already made tinctures or remedies or, you know, essences?
I mean, look, you know, I'm a big believer, Sandy, in encouraging people to empower themselves. And I love sharing this work and I love seeing people make their own medicines and go on their own journeys. But that, you know, that maybe requires more time than some people have. And, you know, there are two sides to this. I think there is the healing side, that if you just want to plants to heal, but don't necessarily have the same impetus to communicate with plants, then go out and buy tinctures, find good organic biodynamic brands. I can particularly recommend Weleda and Vogel. I think that they're both great biodynamic plants, tinctures and tablets you can buy. But I still recommend, you know, start with plants, start with nettle, start with dandelion. It's difficult to mix those plants up for anything. I'm the best person to talk about getting poisoned by plants. I've done it plenty to myself. But that's just my persona. I do follow the poison plant path to some extent. And so I've experimented on myself, but always with the trust that the plants weren't going to kill me. Now that's just me, and that's not something I'd want to put on a label anywhere for anything. But, you know, dandelion is a great plant. I've talked about recently. He's really a plant for right now. He's a master of time, present moment. He's also a master geneticist, but he's also super easy to find. You know, you can pretty much find dandelion anywhere, and this is a great time to get out now and pick dandelion. You know, try not to pick dandelion next to a busy road or somewhere that, you know, the local dogs like to go to the toilet or whatever. You want your plant to be nice. You want to find it from a go for a walk in a park or into nature and field, and just find a dandelion plant that feels like it wants to make medicine with you and sit for a moment and, you know, collect the leaves and all of that, and then make a tincture with it and allow it to be something that, you know, that's you and the medicine coming together. And I think that that's so much more rewarding. Easy to go out and pick the tops off. We've also got cleavers, sticky willy as it's sometimes known. That's super easy, you know, collect that late afternoon and then put it in a cold, in a nice crystal vase with some cold mineral water, leave it overnight, and then the following morning you've got a cold press cleaver's water. Really, really good to clean the lymphatics, which I think is something that's also really important at this time of year. And then we've got plants like ramsons, of course, wild garlic, that grow certainly abundantly in lots of gorges and kind of slightly shady places in Wales, but it's not difficult to find because of the smell. You know, one of the nice things that we used to do was to collect the unopened flower bulbs of wild garlic and pickle them. They're a little bit like a pickled garlic onion or something. So, but that's also very, very good for purifying the blood. So these are just, you know, what we call the four spring cleansing tonic plants. Easy to find. It's not, you know, the smell and the taste of it is pretty distinctive. So suggestion to people, Sandy, don't go looking to, you know, make your first tincture maybe with mandrake or something a little bit far out like that. Just go for something simple. But a good one, you know, get yourself a nice identification plant book for the local forager to go out with, and go with somebody who knows mushrooms. Actually, you have to be so careful with mushrooms. You know, there are edible mushrooms. We've also got a number of hallucinogenic, a number of the mushrooms that will kill you. So yeah, my advice is always to, you know, and I did, this is how I met Mugwort, was with another forager for the first time. I've talked about it before in other interviews, and I think that that's a really great place to start. Yeah, you know, keep it simple, folks, keep it simple. And just make one plant your priority. Don't try and do too many at once.
Okay, well, tell us a little bit, we've got a couple of minutes, tell us about wisdomhub.tv, because I know that there are all kinds of videos and interviews that you've done with all kinds of experts on plants, on everything, quantum healing, just about everything that one can think of.
Thank you. Yes, the Wisdom Hub is really a channel that was set up by a group of us some years ago to promote the ideas of all the things I've talked about. But particularly indigenous wisdom, plant medicine, intelligence, also now including more to do with astrology. I've come to realize that the astrology with plant medicine is really a way to navigate our own personal and collective futures. So there's a lot of free material on there. There's also some more sort of workshop content that is behind a sort of monthly subscription fee that's only £5 a month, so very reasonable. Great interviews on there. I also have a YouTube channel where hopefully this video will go, and a bunch of others that I've done with people. And you can find me by just looking for David Farrell. So, and if you're interested in essences, then there's also the Plant Consciousness Apothecary range, which you can find on plantconsciousness.com. But yeah, if you're into plants and earth energies, then Wisdom Hub TV has a lot of interesting content.
Okay, before we close, just very, very quickly, what is your favorite plant of all?
Oh, wow. Everybody asked me that question. And yeah, you know, it's kind of in any given moment, I have like probably 50 different favorite plants. I've got a lot, Sandy, you know.
Okay, if you were on a desert island and can only take one, which would it be?
Oh, man. Probably it would be, I don't know. I'm going to pass on this question, Sandy, because I've got a whole lot of chat going on now around me. It's just like, who's it going to be? Like, is it me? And I'm just like, ah, guys, I love you all. Okay. I love all the plants.
Right. Okay. You don't want to make a favourite out of your children.
No, I don't want to upset anybody either.
David, thank you. It's been a fascinating conversation. I'd love to learn a lot more, and I'll be checking out wisdomhub.tv. And if you want to know any more about Davil, just Google his name, David Farrell, DavidFarrell, and check out wisdomhub.tv. Thank you for joining us, David.
Thank you so much, Sandy. It's been an absolute delight, as always.
And you also need to know that David does quantum remote healing and occasionally runs plant medicine retreats, working with various sacred plants, cactus and fungi. That's it for this week. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'll be back at the same time next week with another edition of What Is Going On. Till then, it's goodbye from me.